Welcome to Email and Beyond, the podcast bringing you all the latest email marketing and other complementary marketing channel tips, tricks, industry chat, brand insights, and more every 2 weeks. Join me, Kate Barrett, founder and CEO of eFocus Marketing, and Richard Wall, marketing campaign manager at Spotler, as we talk you through the good, the bad, and the ugly of marketing and how you can create a more intelligent strategy that gets results. Welcome to another episode of Email and Beyond. I'm Kate Barrett, founder and CEO of eFocus Marketing.
And I'm Richard Bull, marketing campaign manager for Spotler UK.
Thank you for joining us again. And today we're going to focus in on B2B. So I'm going to be asking Rich the questions today. And we're going to be talking all about B2B workflows, automated flows, drip processes, whatever you want to call them. Basically setting up from action or inaction a series of emails and potentially other channels.
I think that means
there's a multi-omni-channel going on there that really help to drive your B2B users through to the next stage of their journey. So, Rich, first off, if I had no B2B flow set up at all, so I'm a business marketing to other businesses, I'm getting started with my email marketing, you know, maybe I've got a database there, but I haven't done anything with it. What are the top three B2B automation flows that you would look to set up straight away? What are the ones you'd focus on?
Top three. First off, Menu, which is the B2B version of your welcome series.
Okay.
Second, asset downloads, which is, I suppose, post-purchase if you're looking at B2C angle. And then abandoned form is the other one, which is, as you said, it's followed on from an inaction rather than action. So it's a bit of an outlier, but it's responding to, again, they're still responding to behaviour, but responding to what they've not done rather than what they have done.
They haven't completed.
Yeah, they need just a little nudge to get someone over the top to then start gathering the kind of data that you need to then do all the other stuff. Follow on.
Okay. Those. So where should we start? Let's start at the beginning of the B2B journey then. So net new. So you said it's like a welcome series that we would have in B2C. What's the difference? Oh, excuse me.
So this is such a good topic for now.
What's the difference between a B2B net new nurture series and kind of a classic B2C welcome series?
I think a B2C welcome series, you know a bit more about them because we've talked about this, but the GDPR has a little bit of a B2B carve-out. So for B2C, you have to have consent to send emails. So your classic B2C were not open to a welcome email is you get the pop-up, say, welcome to our site, get 10% off your first order, and if it gives your email address. And then they say, oh, yes, are you happy to receive communication when you get this 10%? Then they can start doing the B2C nurture side that we've talked about. Proof of B2B, you don't have to have their consent for their first email. There's a bit of nuance to it, so go and make sure you understand it. But the basic thing you need to know is if you can prove, or with a reasonable level of certainty, that it's a B2B email address, you're allowed to send them that first email without confirmed opt-in, confirmed consent, however you want to talk about it. And the reason I picked this out is because if I was to set up a business setting, like a Cool Hughes, for example, I could use richardcoolhughes@gmail.com as a business address, and you'd be allowed, as a B2B business, you would be allowed to send emails to that address. You can't send to richard.wall@gmail.com because that's my personal account. They're both Gmails, so the bonus is on the sender to prove that it's an address used for business email. And that's where things like personas and Antivica, that you have to have a basis to say, because everyone uses Gmail for business, that's fine. You have to say, no, we are reasonably certain this is And this is a business that we're contacting, even though it's a Gmail address.
Is that under legitimate interest for GDPR? So what I suggest everyone does is go and have a look on the ICO website. They've got great resources about what comes under legitimate interest. I believe there's like a checklist or a quiz that you can go through to see the terms.
I think six basis bases for consent.
Yeah.
And confirmed opt-in is the one that everyone knows. But this one, this carve-out for B2B does exist. But so the point I'm getting back to is the difference is that a B2B welcome series has to be more speculative because they haven't said, I definitely want to hear from you.
Okay, so let's break this down. Okay, so really in B2B, we've got two types of series here, right? We've got a welcome series post sign up. So if someone comes onto your website, maybe does their first download with you or signs up for a webinar or just signs up to your emails, you'd have a welcome series with that. Yes. But what we're talking about primarily here is non-opt-in, effectively cold outreach emails.
Yes, right? Effectively. So they've landed on your website, and the way and with that carve out, this is anyone who's just been on your website, not filled in a form, not left their details, not signed up for anything. You can still send them something. So
this would usually be anonymous data, right? So in the first instance, I guess if we go back a step, you're using software, which obviously is what they have.
Yes.
So you're using software to identify people coming onto your website. And these aren't just people that you know and that are subscribers. These are new visitors that are coming through. So maybe you would, from that software, get to know the company name, but you're not going to know the individual person. So are you then, as a business, to get this list together in the first place, then going on to LinkedIn, or are you going to, you know, a company that sells data, which again for B2B is completely different from B2C. For B2C, I'd be like, don't do it. B2B, it's a whole different ballgame. So how are you finding that data? How are you finding the people to send this kind of net new nurture series?
So the tool, you're right, it's a multi-step, right? The tool is called an IP lookup tool. And if you don't know, your IP address is like your mailing address for your computer. Every computer job that's connected to the internet has an address that identifies it. And from that, you usually know the business name. And then, as we say, we work with a data provider, but it's Cognizant that we currently work with. And they say, okay, so from this address, these are the four or five people we know who work in our case, marketing. So we say, okay, it's probably a marketing manager who's coming on by nature of the kind of people that use us and the people we delivery guarantee target, the personas that we use as our first primary audience. So we can say, if it's Kate or it's me, we can send email saying, hey, the fun went on our website. And so there is a multi-layer to the IP lookup software knows the company, and you can use legitimate checked legal data sources. So then this is the key thing with B2B versus B2C. B2B, it's a bit of a shot in the dark.
Yeah.
You can take an educated guess at it as a new website that you might be completely wrong. And so you have to design the flow and the emails in it with that in mind.
And I think that's really key, because if we look at the performance of opt-in data, so getting, if we think specifically about B2B, somebody who comes onto your website, signs up to your email list, and then goes on, it's going to have a much higher engagement level than people who you've never contacted before. It's out of the blue. So I think that's something, if anyone is looking at doing kind of lead generation through email, you have to understand that. You can't use the standard email platforms, because a lot of them mitigates terms and conditions to have non-opt-in data. You can't do that through your platform. So you need a very specific B2B sending platform that allows for that type of data, because in essence, this is people who don't know you. Now, you're warming it up a little bit by saying, okay, well, we think this company has been on our website. Now, there might be 100 people that worked in that company, and it was only one of those. So it's still that stab in the dark, like you say. So from that type of messaging, you're going to get much, much lower engagement rates on those types of campaigns. I mean, Rich, what would you say is kind of different if you think about B2B companies that you've worked with previously? What's the kind of average difference between those types of rates of somebody who's coming in on a welcome program and they've opted in versus when you're sending out those kind of net new lead generation, haven't opted in for your emails?
I mean, there's so many layers to it, as you say. I mean, one of the things that we have got a lot of is marketing students coming in, and because we, it's almost a facet of what we do. We try and put content out there that's thought leadership, to use a horrible term, and yeah. So
that's not horrible.
Some people like it, some people don't. It's a good one. Okay, but
helpful content.
Yeah, so by providing helpful content and kind of marketing context rather than sell content, we get a lot of marketing students landing on our site because they come and look at it. A lot of you downloaded this podcast saying, what is RFM? What are these things about marketing that I need to know as I launch my career? Yeah. And so it's not, I suppose, a question of the difference in engagement. It's the difference in engagement from the kind of people that you want. Because if they've opted in and they've decided, you've got a much stronger handle on the idea that they're coming to you for learning, it's knowledgeable, for solving a particular problem that they've got with their email marketing, with their platforms, with their segmentation, whenever it might be. This workflow, by nature, will be... So there might be... my second ever job out of university, I was doing sales for a logistics company, and they had a model where this franchise that I worked for covered the GU Vost curve, and they had first dibs on any business in there. So part of my job was researching as many companies as they possibly could in that postcode area and seeing if they would have a need for this. This was way back then, and it was a very vague thing. Knowing what I know now, I'm going around looking completely differently. But this is, 10 years ago. Anyway. Anyway, the point being that I would have gone on Spotless website, have a look around, and went, they do software, they're not shipping packages around. Not worth it. But I would then have landed in Spotless net new membership, so I've been on the website. So it's still, the engagement rate for these might be really, really high, but is it engagement from people you want? By definition, it's going to be low because you're casting a wider net. And I think that's the sensible way to look at it.
I would definitely, certainly in my experience, I mean, if I kind of throw out averages, you know, you might expect 20-25% open rate. We shouldn't pin everything on open rate, but just to give like a top level metric just to work from. 20-25% open rate from internal B2B opted in data, whereas you might be talking more 5-7% in terms of an external list. Now, I'd say probably with the list you're talking about, higher. I'd say somewhere could be in the middle of those two numbers because hopefully they've potentially been on your website or, you know, something going on in that business that might need that additional support, whether it was that person or not. When it's completely cold outreach, in my experience, 5-6% open, half a percent click, if you're lucky. So you definitely need the volume going through with these. So if we're thinking about that net new nurture series, we're thinking about slightly warmer leads who we think have come onto the website, but we're still kind of casting that net to those businesses. What are the key elements of a series that you're sending out? You know, would you just send one email to those people? Would you send a series of 10 emails? Would you bring in other marketing channels like LinkedIn messages? Or how would you go about putting that together?
I mean, the current series I've been working with is four emails. And the first one is a real wide net. It's what we call our treasure box of things. So we'll have a couple of our recent blogs, a couple of recent webinars that we've done, linked to the Spotter podcast, a link to upcoming events. So this is basically saying, we don't really know you yet. Here's a list. So show us what you're interested in.
We want to help
and then,
you.
Yeah. So if they dive into, I mean, we'll put a book of demo in there. So we'll allow access to that. If they actually, you know, do want to demonstrate away, we're not going to turn that away.
No.
We're not going to force them through the funnel just to satisfy some marketing to
your cheek.
But the point is, we'll say, you know, we'll offer you some content on social. We'll offer you some content on, you know, as well. Offer you some content on AI. And that's when we start to be able to put them into a segment of, okay, and the other side of that is then, also we leaded the blogs, but then we gate our content, gated resources, the white papers, downloads, videos, So then we're kind of nudging them towards the, oh, fill in your email address so we can say, is it you? And then also, if it's not, that if it's a part of the intern doing research and they say, oh, I found this company, did this time, they found, check them out. They go in, they click on the emails, and then we know it's them, and we're into the person with the buying authority or the cloud to actually push it for, because with the best will in the world, most interns don't have the authority to go and say, oh, we're using a new email platform. Yeah. That would be a very strange company that let that kind of format happen.
Definitely.
So then the second one, that we start to try and build it into what they've engaged with in that first one. Mm-hmm. So we classify most of our, the three main streams we have in our downloadable content is marketing automation, email marketing, and lead gen. Those are kind of the three really core bits of business, the ways we bring in the most. I mean, all the other bits are great to help on, but most people come for that core business and then branch out. Mm-hmm. So then you can start layering on it all, because then you know you've got some activity report, you've hopefully got the exact person, whether your match was correct or not, you hopefully know that by now.
Yeah.
And then we would do the thing after that would be, oh, interested in a demo. Well, you know, you've, at this point, they've clicked on several things, we've seen our activity, we've got a sense of, I mean, urgency is a difficult thing to pin down, but
especially with buying software. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
You know, the buying cycles, and this is the thing for B2B, right? The buying cycles can be a year, 2 years sometimes. So you've got to kind of take that into account as well.
Absolutely, you do. But then we've got enough thing. And if they go for the demo at that point, great. And then we move them out of that workflow, because they become, we tell them, we've labeled them as a prospect that one rather than a lead. And that's one of the conditions to remaining in the workflow. And then the last one after that is an invite more specifically targeted to a recent event, because we, oh, you don't want a one-on-one, okay, that feels pushy. Why not come and just listen to us live on an event, hear from us a bit more directly, and get a bit more the in-depth knowledge of a webinar. You can dive much deeper in than you can at blog, and you get a bit more sense, hopefully, of the kind of people, because that's an important part of what we do.
Yeah, people buy from people,
yes,
right? Even in your B2B, people buy from people.
Software with a service. This is,
yes,
this is the thing we're pushing with. We're on,
yes,
now. So it's an idea of trying to get them to show them what we're all about in stages, in dollops. I should say we space these every 4 working days. So you might get to do it a week if you're coming on Monday, but basically you're getting a weekly one. So we're not going, remember us. Show us what you're interested in, and then maybe move it on through then. A economy percentage, let's be frank, we can be, a high percentage will go through that workflow and still be leads. But if they've not opted out, if they've not told us to go away, if they've not unsubscribed, we'll take it. We're building the pipeline for, as we said, year, 2 years, 5 years.
It's that thought leadership, that authority, you know, showing that your B2B brand knows what they're talking about. You're there to help them. You're there to support them. If they're ready for a demo, brilliant. If they're not, here's some great content that's going to help them in their career, in their life, whatever it is you're doing, which is so important for B2B. And it's one of the key switches between B2B and B2C, right? B2B is got to be 80-90% thought leadership, authority,
yeah,
helpful, educational, valuable content. Whereas for B2C, it's when we switched around. 80-90% should be, these are our products, come and explore our categories, here's what we've got on offer now, because that's what people have signed up to in that case. With B2B, it is that much more perspective. And I know we've got a great blog on the eFocus marketing website, which we'll link to with this podcast, where you talk through that net new nurture series.
Yes.
Gave some examples of it, so look out for that link. It's a great way to dig in. I think that's brilliant, and I think it shows a different side of B2B than what we've explored in our podcast and other blogs previously with B2C. They are completely different, and this is something that you can do in B2B, probably need to be doing in B2B. And do you link it with any other marketing channels to get more of that kind of multi-channel or omni-channel approach in terms of the net new and reaching out? So this is acquisition stage as well, right? Getting those leads in and trying to get them through. So do you use any other channels with that flow, or is it just email that you focus on there?
This flow focuses purely on email, because it's a very specific thing to do. I mean, one of the biggest one of the obvious things we have to do is look at where people stumbled on our website from. So that's kind of a step backwards, forwards, out. Where, how are you? Well, so that we then bring that talent, because that's, for the most, I find things like LinkedIn work for me. They're better as part of the sales process. That if we can
the next stage, John, yeah. You mean? So if we're talking about the lead process now, would you say that the sales process and bringing in those channels is next stage when they've done this series, when they've taken an action or engaged? Where do you think that kind of switches from leads to sales process?
I think this, what you want to be careful with, especially casting the wide net, is you don't want to be a little bit, everyone's got a story of saying, oh, you know, I talked about toothbrush, then I'm seeing Facebook ads for them. I didn't even search on my phone. I just talked about it with my mum and my friend.
Do you know that we're going to get toothbrush ads now on our phones, right? Now you've said that and you've started to say that we're going to get toothbrush ads now.
Yeah, I'm absolutely glad I did not need a toothbrush.
Yes, thank you. Nothing toothbrush.
So, especially when you're doing this cold outreach, there's a real, like, the worst thing you can do is come on too strong.
Yeah.
We've talked about this in other ones. I've talked about, like, my particular habit, how I research buying gifts. That I look at things month and months and come back from the bookmark and think about them later. I don't want to be bombarded through hundreds of different channels. So in this B2B section, if you're reaching out, I would leave it as just email, be a light touch, let them. People will remember, if you've done your branding right, people are going to remember you. As your content is valuable, they'll remember you. That you don't need to hit them with an email, add an SMS, add a LinkedIn message, add a Facebook app, add a PPC
app. Even them an opt-in.
Exactly. So in this section, I would say, no, to keep it focused on email. The omnichannel approach, fabulous. But as I say, our sales team have a lot of success reaching out through LinkedIn things. But that's once you know so much more about the company, the individual, their needs, the one-on-one type thing becomes more valuable.
Email and Beyond is a Spotler and eFocus Marketing production. Spotler is the all-in-one sales and marketing software for small and medium-sized businesses. Our suite of products covers email marketing, website personalization and tracking, social media management, and CRM. If you want to find out more about how our software can drive your success, visit spotler.co.uk/email and beyond.
Okay, so there we go. So that's number one, ticked off the list, talking about that net new nurture series, people coming onto your website, and then you taking that information and really kind of nurturing them through to get into that sales process. So I guess that's the difference between kind of like a marketing verified lead versus a marketing qualified lead, and again, acronym. Okay, so yeah. We could go, I chose the full words there because I think I'm stumble over the acronym. Okay, brilliant. So that's the first one. So the second one, remind me, what was the second one on your must-have B2B workflow list?
This is asset download.
No, just do it. Talk to us about this then. So this is next stage on. So previously, it's people who've been on your website. They're anonymous, but we know the company. We can find out who they are. This is the next stage, right? We're starting to identify these people and give an opt-in, effectively. Yes. Is that right?
It is. So this actually has more in common with the B2C welcome, because as I said, I stand by the unmitigating content in a B2B context. So they've given you their email address, and they've also given you, this is what I'm interested in. We don't have many white papers that are everything you need to know about marketing, because that would be a phenomenally big piece of
work. Together.
You have to update it every 2 months. And
yeah.
So, yeah. Especially bits and pieces. In the short, much more focused and how-to guides and things like that. So we're getting into, this is teaching guides and white paper. Guides are kind of learning, and white papers are kind of how-tos. So that would, when it's guide or white paper, we get this little more sense of the urgency. Like, is this I need to learn about social media marketing Germany, or I need to learn how to set up a Facebook ad. So we're getting much more into the urgency and what they need to know and the topic that they care about. And as I say, we've got their direct emails and we know it's the person.
And this is so critical, because what you've got there is pretty important information.
Yes.
About those prospects, about those potential customers. Because by doing a download, they're telling you where they are on their journey. They're telling you what they're interested in learning about. They're telling you where their areas are that they need to improve their knowledge or their team's knowledge. it's a lot of information coming back through here. So how do you use that successfully in a series, kind of a post-download or a post-sign-up series? How are you kind of using that data, and how would you suggest to use that data?
So the first thing is to see if you can explore that. So to make this one work, you have to categorize all your content that you've got. Depending on how we've got 120 plus downloadable resources on the Spotify, and we group them by sort of product category, by whether they're social, by whether they're the gem, by whether they're email.
So that could be, it could be those categories, it could be beginner, intermediate, advanced,
yes.
It could be whatever it is for your business, but having those grouping of those pieces of content is really important to start them.
Yes, so yeah, the grouping matter, what the groupings are, is on you.
Yes.
Really, the biggest thing I tell people on the webinars, it's not, these are things you should test, this, that you should be testing, same thing with it, you should be segmenting, I have to leave what your segments are.
Yeah.
So then the follow-up for that would be more content that's based on the same thing. So we've got slightly different angles on PPC, slightly different angles on how we're using AI, slightly different angles on even on subject line, the deliverability, or the more we can go on all sorts of different levels. And that, the beginner, the advanced intermediate is actually a really interesting thing that I want to think about now, how we evolve the segments that we have.
It's the different needs, isn't it? What you're looking for is, what is telling me what this prospect need is? And then when you find that need, you can then tailor that content around it. And what I find really interesting, having worked with multiple different B2B clients at eFocus Marketing, is I love your angle of, let's say if they've downloaded a social media guide, we want to be following up with more information about social media because they've shown us that interest. Now, what we don't want to do is exclude information about everything else as well. Because we want to give them that opportunity. They may not know that you offer information about anything else. So it's that opportunity to further explore what there is without encroaching on the fact that you know that they're interested in social in that primary sense. So if we think about the makeup of an email, if we think about those kind of primary content modules being social media focused in this particular example, you may want to have like a mop-up module before your footer.
I like the name.
That says, did you know we also have this great new guide about PPC ads? Look for something that is adjacent to the piece of content that they're doing. If they're looking at social media and they're looking at social media ads information, they may also be interested in
PPC
information or how to run LinkedIn ads specifically rather than general social media ads or whatever that is, but look for that adjacent piece of information. Put it as a secondary.
Yes.
You don't want it to be taking over the rest of the content because we want to focus in on what they told us they like, but it opens that world up as well with your business to say, hey, do you know we're also the authority on this? We've got it. We can help you. We are the people who can help you in this area or this area or this area or whatever it is. So what I love is the ability to target and focus, but also don't cut people out.
Yeah.
As different elements as well. Don't say, oh, well, you've told us you're only interested in social media, so we're never going to send you anything else. Interest change. Jobs change, job roles change, what they need changes. So I think that's an important element of a content piece for B2B, targeted, but gives that other view as well, help them explore what you offer.
Yes, it's that, the logic of cross-selling, isn't it? That it's much easier to get someone to, if someone's only using their email platform, it's much easier to get them into Gator Leads, Gator Social, CRM, whatever it is. It's much easier to get rather than say, oh, we're going to save the whole package because I came across a stat that I think it's 30% of B2B SaaS software isn't fully used. So,
I would guess it's probably higher than that, actually.
I mean, that's an average. So, there's probably like there with 80% plus.
I mean, honestly, so many customers that I've seen that have got platforms with all the big options you could want, and they're just sending out. Your campaigns, battery glass, same thing to everyone. It's like, okay. But the issue with that, whether you're B2B or B2C, the issue with that is not knowing what you want to do, what you want to achieve, who you need to target to get you to that end goal. That is, you know, when you can't see the wood for the trees, right?
And that's
you really
do. And that's how you do. And that's the tangential bit of saying, you know, you're coming to us for a social media tool, and we can also help you with this once you're used to it. It's getting, yes. So there's an education piece and a cross-selling piece in that. It all comes together.
Okay, right. So that's our second one then. So post download, or post sign up to our webinar. We're going to follow up with relevant information, give them what they need to take them through and build that relationship. And I think that's where lean scoring really comes into play from a B2B point of view, where you are attributing a different score value to different actions that somebody's taking on your website. And that's how you then start linking those series to get to your customer service, your sales team, and it really links together. But okay, so that's brilliant. So we've got two stages of the journal there that are now being covered by some great campaigns. What is the third B2B workflow that you would suggest anyone watching or listening goes and looks to set up?
My third one is based on what they're not doing, and they're talking form failures or incomplete forms. So as I said, we have gated resources, we have online webinars, all these things you put your email address in to access the content. And some percentage, I don't have the number in front of me, but it's obviously harder than I would like, so I'd like it to be 100. Some percentage will land on the resource download, the email, the event page, and they'll look at them, and then they'll read for me, and they'll go.
Or the demo page, or a contact page, or something like that. And I think particularly when they get into that demo stage, that's a hot lead for a B2B company. Yes. You don't want to be losing these people. This is the point at which they're almost at that conversion stage. They're so close. You can smell it. Yes. We've just got to bring them through that last stage. So maybe they've started filling in one of those forms and they've stopped filling it in. Is that right?
I mean, for us, we do a single field. We literally just do email address for and then actually for our event, you'd say name and email address. So we don't get many that start filling the form and then don't complete. But if they start filling the form, we tend to get them. If we keep it simple like that, that's the last barrier that you have to cross. So you make that one as easy as you possibly can. As we said with the IP lookups and any things, then being on the website is enough for you to do the things. You don't need to get all this information in a big lot for.
Yeah.
So more common is land on the page and they go, no, I'm not at that stage quite yet. And that, I mean, my dog actually, firstly, it's fine. Like, we got you on the page, and I think it's 5% of B2B audiences or B2B people are in a buying mood.
Sounds about right.
At any one time.
Because it's such a big global buying cycle a lot of the time.
So the fact that they're getting, the fact they're going onto your demo page, the fact that they're far enough to be thinking about a demo is still a good data point for you. This isn't how you need to go full charm offense. It just need a little something. And so the way we set up lead scoring, landing on the demo page would be enough to give them a hot lead, and that's when we'd start handing on sales and starting that personalized approach. Because there is only so far the automation can take you, or some who you have to have the one-to-one conversation.
In B2B, absolutely. It's critical to get in front of somebody and have that conversation.
And I mean, maybe I just spend too much time writing automated emails, but I am convinced you can tell that an email is automated or is from a person. You can work as hard as you like in getting the styling and the formatting and the language and the personalization right. But I think we get so many emails that we know.
It's still not conversation, is it? It's still not. I'm not on the phone to you. I'm not in person with you.
Even a one-to-one email is different. There's a little an email of sense that people have, and I don't think that's so far. But I think people then dislike automated emails. They dislike automated emails that don't deliver what they want.
I'm going to interrupt you there, because that is so critical for anything in B2B that you're doing. If the email isn't expected, if they don't want it, and it's not valuable and relevant to them, you've lost them.
Yeah, gone.
You've got to tick those three boxes. So whenever you're sending out those messages, you've got to be keeping those three things in mind.
Yes, and then, I mean, we talked about pizza in the RFM episode, but I like talking about it in a B2B concept with this 5%. That automates the emails that like dominant menus. And I stole this analogy from my girl Anthony Studios, who's a really good sales trainer. The one was marketing and you like sales for a little bit.
Fabric.
Marketing. We'll come back to that another time. But the point is that these emails, they're like, and the way you tell the story is, has this ever happened to you? You're sitting at home, knock on the door. I'm not going to do it because I'll mess up my microphone. Hi, I'm from Domino's. Would you like this pizza? Never happened to you, has it? Never been like
free pizza, that'd be nice.
Well, I'm even going to send it to you rather give it to you. But at the point being, they probably have a 5% success rate because there's a very narrow window where you're hungry, but you've not started cooking, or started eating, and you're in, and pizza is what you're in the mood for. So by pulling these people in, so you're getting them in, you're showing them content, you're going, I'm hungry now, but when you want pizza, come to us. So the value, being given the value, isn't a one sided, it's not a this is the right end of one for sales. So having them getting, if you can get them onto your demo page, you've delivered them enough value and you should enjoy that and be happy with it. And yes, then you start putting them into these more one to one email fields so you can address what is it? It might, because it might literally be they're about to, then they forgot they had a meeting and had to jump onto a call. Like, it might not be that they're not ready to buy what they might be, but, you know, life has a habit of getting in the way.
Yeah. But I think linking it into that lead scoring, linking it into the sales team, it's fantastic. And then I guess with automations, actually what it means is we've almost split our abandoned form message that we first started with into two, right? So you've got came on, that we'll use the demo page as an example. Yeah. Came on the demo page, didn't start filling it in and bounced off. So yeah. Effectively, that's more like an abandoned browse, I guess. You're taking that information, using that as a trigger. And then you've got somebody starts to fill in the form. So in the first step, and this is obviously where you need to think about the layout of your forms and the construction of them. But you've got to get email in the first step. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to follow up from it. But let's say if your demo form has two pages to it, you get email the first page. They go through to the second page, then they drop off and don't complete the rest of it. Or you've got a slightly longer form, you know, some B2B companies have those slightly longer kind of forms. Yeah. You've got to fill in certain information before you can get to a demo or get to whatever it is. So we've got to be thinking about those two elements because, again, you've got very different behaviours there, right? So you've got came on the page, not quite ready for it yet. Came on the page, started filling out a form, which gives you a much more strong indicator they are ready, but didn't complete it. Do they need help with the form? Was there information that they couldn't find it was asking for? That they weren't sure how to fill it in? Whatever it might be, it's giving that support. And they think understanding the difference between those two is firstly critical. I think having automated campaigns to target each of those two is critical. But then, like you said, it's having that B2B sales process, one-to-one follow-up, that actually you might just be able to answer their question really quickly and help them or get them through to that next stage. And we've got to get them to that conversion. So that's what we want to do. I mean, in terms of content in either of those scenarios, what type of content would you recommend in an automated workflow? So if they're coming onto the page and then bouncing off again, if they're coming on starting to fill out the form and then not completing it, what type of content do you think you could kind of bring in to engage them, to get their attention back, to bring them back in and start that process or complete that process?
So I think for the first scenario, they've landed on the page and not going first. I mean, what's their journey to that page? Have they time book a demo or a spot or have a proper PPC ad and landed on and they're not ready at all? Because I haven't got the figure, but that happens.
Yes.
If you can try and drive a demo in a short-term campaign, then you will capture some that aren't ready. Or have they been around a lot? Have they been reading your blogs for months? Have they done
see where they scored 160 factors.
Yes, exactly. you need to layer on what's behind that behavior, what led to that behavior, how quickly they got through to those different things. And that's why I like personal outreach for the ones that have been, ones that have racked up a big lead score over a medium time.
Yeah.
Then if I like, it's still worth that a one to one, because that is probably a full of a meeting, or you know, forgot to charge their laptop, or you know, got on a train before they filled out the form.
Yeah. I can see your cycle with that from experience where you've done
this. I've done so many things where I've gone onto my phone half an hour or an hour later and gone, oh, I was in the middle of that, wasn't I?
Yeah. Oh, I do all the time. I'm like, what was I doing? What was I supposed to be looking at here? And I've got distracted by Facebook or something.
I mean, the started to lay out a form and didn't complete it. I think that's a slight difference now, because I'd say we keep our forms really simple to try and fill that behavior off. And one of the things that I see far too often is say, oh, how big is your company? What's your annual turnover? I don't know what spot was that. It's done. I mean, I know where to go and find it, but I'm not going to go and look it up just to get hold of one white paper.
Yeah.
So that's almost. That's a form problem rather than a nurture problem.
It's a form problem, and it's also a data reliability problem. Because if we're putting those types of things on a B2B form, expecting people to know that information and they don't, we're just going to be guessing the answers. In which case, then any segmentation we're doing based on company size or...
is going to be wrong.
Be off, yeah, absolutely. So it's something to think about.
And there's also probably a thing of, or this company doesn't know who I am. Mm. And especially for us, as a Santa plan on the office IP lookup, if we then have, oh, fill in this 10-page form so we know everything about you, you're thinking, imagine you know that by now. If your technology can help me the way you say it now, you know this. Yeah. And we do, so we read it in the form.
Right. I love that. That's something that so many people don't think about. And again, in B2B or B2C, I say this to clients of eFocus all the time, there's more than one way to collect data.
Yes.
Just getting somebody to fill in a form and give you what I call that as known data, which you demographic or your thermographic data. That's one thing. But actually, you can ascertain that information from so many other places, from behavioural data once they're signed up, what they're looking at, what they're interested in, any of those elements. You can bring all of that in to your segmentation, to the content that you're putting out there. And again, anything, whether it's B2B or B2C, and obviously here we're talking specifically about B2B workflows, understand who you're talking to. Understand what it is that you want to be driving them through to, what's that next action, that next stage of the life cycle, and then provide the content that's relevant and interesting and valuable. Would you add anything to that to kind of wrap us up for today?
No, but that's a perfect example, actually. I thought that occurs to me on my own company size is, it's bottom stands, company size completely irrelevant, it's marketing team size. Because if you're a solo marketer...
I understand what data you need.
Yes. If you're a solo marketer, you probably can't get the full power of our platform out. So there's legal claim because there's probably helping to be out there if you're a solo.
No, absolutely.
If you're, you know, if you're HP, if you're Microsoft, if you're one of these enormous sized companies, then you've got more time to get. Then again, there's other parts at the other end. What we're focused on, our key kind of persona is like the hands-on marketer. They've got a team of 3, 4, or 5. You know, they're marketing manager. They're probably sitting in meetings with the CEO or the managing director, but they also do have to go and write some of the emails themselves. So, I mean, that could be, you know, there could be a consultancy business or a software business where there's 5 marketers in a whole team and the whole company is only 10. Or it could be there's 5 marketers in a manufacturing warehouse that actually has 700 employees, but the vast majority of those are on the shop floor, have nothing to do with email. They're delivering, they're manufacturing, they're producing health, safety testing, whatever else is in there. So yeah, company size is one of these really, like, it's a starting point, I guess. Like, it's a piece of data that matters, but certainly in our world, that's not the data that we care about. And so you're right, it's about deciding which bits of data are actually valuable for you. I mean CRM solutions are getting brilliant to the point they can record absolutely everything, but are you wasting it? You can, you can't not see the wood for the trees and start looking at two companies that actually their marketing use case is identical, but they're completely different industries, they're completely different locations, they're completely different business sizes. But the thing that you need them for is, and that's where these nurture series come in, of what you need to understand what it is this person is looking for, and whether it's something they're already doing, they want to get better at, or they're not doing. There's all these there. That's what the nurture is designed to do. Is you with the how do guides and the conceptual for leadership guides, you need to sort of winkle out these different actual, what is the actual use case that's sitting in there, and there are better ways to do that than a form with 16 different people. Then
100%, totally agree with you. I think that's a good place for us to wrap up today. Yes. Lots of information about B2B workflows. Thank you for sharing some of the Spotler information there as well. Hopefully you've all found that helpful, and we will see you next time for more Email and Beyond on our next episode.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
If you like this episode, follow us on YouTube and subscribe through iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts.